Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon a pot of word salad at the bottom of a sometimes inappropriate rainbow. At the controls are indie authors Cintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. I'd like to say they know what they're doing, however, as the official voiceover guy, I have sworn an oath of fealty. Welcome to the What the Book podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hello, bookers. Welcome to What the Book. I love that intro. I love listening to Jordan speak our words and make our intro so exciting. Now, we are, of course, in season two. I have with me Kay Banning Kellum. Hello, Caleb. Always
hey.
A pleasure to have you. One of my two most favorite people in the world on What the Book. Of course, our second one is missing in action. No, well, we know where he is. Well, we kind of know where he is. No, we don't really know where he is. He's somewhere.
Well, we know where he isn't, and he isn't here. But that's okay because we have a pinch hitter who has come in to take his place this week. Go ahead and roll yourself on in here. Ross, introduce yourself to the good.
Hello. Nice to meet you guys or speak to you guys. We've spoken. I'm Ross Young. I'm indie author, I guess. That's how I'd name myself.
Absolutely. Ah, Young, of course, people. Look him up, follow him, stalk him. We encourage all indie authors to support and celebrate each other. One of the things that draws me to always talk to Young, or Ross, as I will call him tonight, is that we both write about the Grim Reaper. We have a Reaper love between us that runs very deep into the souls of hell, I do believe. Although we do Reaper with funny, don't we, Ross?
We do. I that's why I love the Grim Reaper so much. I think there's so much fun that can be had with the character and the idea behind it. It's there's a lot of fun there to be had with the Grim Reaper. He is awesome in every possible way.
Absolutely. I mean, he's generally, a lot of people will take him into a horror aspect. I tend to like him more of a lovable Reaper. A lovable Reaper. A relatable Reaper is what I like.
Well, he was pretty likable in the Bill and Ted movie. In Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. You know, he played an instrument, he got in the band, you know, and the Grim Tales of Billy and Mandy. He was also a fairly enjoyable guy there. So they got some nice Reapers out there.
See, I've never seen the Reaper as a horror guy because I mean, if I talk to my character Carr, he always explains to me that he doesn't actually kill anyone. So how could he possibly be a bad guy? All he does is help with their transition. He's an escort of sorts.
Okay. That's it. I don't know if my Grim would ever be called an escort, but he's definitely, it's definitely his job is to move people. I've called him the
escort. See what he says.
See, when the Grim Reaper does it, everybody says he's just a nice guy. When Jack Kevorkian was doing it, people throw him in jail.
All right. So, bookers and Ross and Caleb, of course, what we're going to be discussing tonight is something that I think it applies to all genres, and I want to explore how we would apply it to all genres. But does sex sell? Does sex sell books? Does sex sell movies? How do I phrase this? When I'm looking specifically, I guess, at the romance genre, 90 to 95% of covers will involve half naked men, because sex sells. Sex will always sell.
I think that's also a market writing concept though, you know, and maybe you can thank Danielle Steele for that. Maybe it goes back further. I think that's market writing right there, 101. You know, you're going to have a steamy romance book. You're going to have a shirtless Fabio on there. That's just the way it's done.
It's the Mills and Boone. Absolutely. That's always been there. The long haired man with his shirt open and the abs and the whole shebang. But it's still done.
Remember when Fabio got his face busted open by like a goose or something when he was on a roller coaster?
I shouldn't laugh because it hurts. But he did. Oh.
I mean, I'm sure that was horrifying. Roller coaster, you're scared of falling out of the fucking thing. The last thing you're scared of is a fucking bird smacking you in the face. But, you know, when you're as gorgeous as Fabio, you can afford to take a goose to the face once or twice.
Was it an actual goose? It can't have been actually a goose. Those things are huge.
It was.
I think it was a goose.
It just went straight into his head. The morbid side of me finds that so amusing, and yet I really shouldn't. But, you know, it's just reason like 3,800 that I'm going to hell. So it's all good. We write predominantly more darker books. None of us certainly write straight romance. But no,
absolutely not.
Where does, if sex does in fact sell books, and it does, flat out cannot deny the fact that sex will sell books, where can we place it in our genre to increase our...
Simply put it goes where it fits, like anything else. And that's always my universal answer to anything. You can do whatever the hell you want as long as you can do it, as long as you have the skills to do it. Then you can put it in there. It's just like when we've discussed taboos in writing. It's just like when we discussed, writing outside of our personal perspectives and things like that. It's never a matter of should with me. It's always a matter of can. Can you do it? Do you have the skill to do it? If you can throw sex on in there, then and make it work and make it profitable and make it move the product in a way that is, not intentionally ironic and things like that, then yeah, go for it. Then obviously it works. Now I'm pretty sure if your genre is children's books, then you shouldn't be using it. But anything else, yeah, but you know, anything else, I mean, if it works, it works.
It's a really interesting point though, because I was reading the other day on Twitter about somebody talking about them looking at agents and submitting their work, and so many agents looking for middle grade and young adult fiction that contained a lot more, I mean, for want of a better description of it, of sexual activity in it. And that I found that quite shocking, but quite interesting at the same time, that it's something that is seems to be spreading across every genre now. It's expected to have some kind of beyond romantic, but physically romantic element to it. But even to the point where they were talking about it being in middle grade fiction, that was quite surprising to me.
It's bizarre because, like, my first series, I aimed at YA, young adult, upper YA, but still YA. It's all fade to black as far as sex scenes go, but the language is very high in it because I have some sweary characters. I can't help that. However, that took me out of YA because of the language at the time, where now, even in that short period of time of 3 to 5 years, it's now opening up in the YA that the language isn't as taboo as it used to be. So it's back in the YA category, apparently. I mean, whatever. It's hard to keep up with the waves as they go sometimes.
Young adult is one of those genres, kind of like, almost like when we were discussing paranormal, that, you know, it's kind of a hard one to define, though. The Maze Runner is considered young adult, but that could also be considered action, you know. I don't know. I mean, The Catcher in the Rye is technically young
and
adult.
And even Hunger Games is young adult. And yet, look at that. The horror aspects in Hunger Games, I think, you know, could borderline traumatize some children. I suppose it also comes to the child.
Well,
you don't know the child that you're buying it for.
If they're a wuss, then sure.
Oh,
but
stop it. I'm eating pastas. You can't
But
do
no, I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, to me, I feel like young adult is almost one of those genres that fits almost more into
I
general
think so
fiction.
too. You look at the young adult,
What the
so
hell
you
is it?
look at
Who
those
knows?
15 and 16 year olds, and you're looking at young adult technically is from 14 to 18 in the genre. Well, I've seen some 14 year olds out there with mouths that put mine to shame. So, you know, it's a very, I think that the young adults of today can handle a hell of a lot more than the young adults of, say, you know, 15,
Oh
20 years.
yeah, I mean, not to mention, I mean, young adult is a genre, which means that it's geared that way. So you have shit like Diary of a Wimpy Kid or whatever, you know, that's more, I guess, of what would be considered the prime young adult writing. Like, okay, this is an author sitting down, you know, Jeff Kinney writes that for a certain age group. So you kind of get that corny stuff. Whereas Twilight,
It
which is
is, you know.
considered young adult in
Yep,
some
it
fucking
is.
circles, is I but I think that's more of a super general version of it because anybody can enjoy it if you're into paranormal. You could, because I would consider Twilight to be
It
more
is.
paranormal
But
romance
because it
than
doesn't
young
have
adult.
sex and it doesn't have
So,
language, it's classed as par is classed as young adult or can fit into that genre, put it that way.
it
So
seems to be with
just I
them.
think to just move forward on this, let's just say that does sex sell for the purposes of this conversation in the applicable realms? Otherwise, we're going to be spending this entire podcast going through where sex necessarily maybe shouldn't be, you know, a you know, the hungry caterpillar probably does not need an orgy scene. But
Well, I don't know if you want me to read it again.
then again, he does have a ravenous appetite, though,
There's a
so
lot of
he's always eating.
food. I can't.
I mean, it says he likes to eat. It
Well,
doesn't say what he likes
that
to
would
eat.
make a really good porn story, wouldn't it? Oh, different subject.
Christ, you can write that one.
We need to
That
go
is
get
all you, son.
Rebecca
Yeah,
involved.
you're completely on your own.
The Very Horny Caterpillar by Centra Salt.
Oh, I'm injured. Stop it. Yes, I'm not even supposed to be laughing. All right, so sex does sell, but and we so we you want me you want us to move past that. I get that. But if I am, say, if I take my Grim Reaper book into the discussion, on the cover, I've purposely put the Grim Reaper as looking a very buff man, even though typically the Grim Reaper is, you know, skeleton. Well, he's skeleton by
A
night in
skeleton.
my book, buff,
All right.
sexy man during the day.
Because you write paranormal, all of the things in that genre have to be fuckable. It
That's
doesn't matter what they are.
paranormal.
They just have to be fuckable. That's paranormal 101.
Your
Everything
Grim
has to be
Reaper
fuckable.
fuckable, Ross?
Not in the slightest. My Grim Reaper doesn't have any apparatus to fuck
Oh,
with.
wow.
Oh, he's got no corporeal.
So there's no sex selling in your book then, Ross? Oh.
There is very little sex in my books at all. In my release book, there's no. I'm just trying to. There kind of is one, but it's more the bloody aftermath after a murder than there is actually a sex scene. So it's certainly not selling sex. It's probably zero sex scenes. In fact, zero romantic elements in my book. I'm very much more on the comedy side of things. And I found that quite interesting because having done, I did, do you guys know about the Indie April thing that happened on Twitter? Yeah. So after that, I asked a bunch of authors if they would fill in a survey for me. And I don't know if either of you guys saw this. It was over 100 of the indie authors on Twitter that responded to it. I thought I'd open this up when you told me what today's topic was. And like, I didn't specifically ask how many people write about sex, but I did put a load of categories there. And one of the things I'm just going to try and find, if I can, is if people who explicitly write in romance or in there's what is there, romance, erotica, and a few other things here. Paranormal romance was its own category. if they actually felt they had more success than people who row in other categories. Because I thought that might be quite an interesting thing to know. So we could answer, yeah. Does sex actually sell? There's a lot more questions there than that. But so I'm just having a look now, and I thought that you might find quite interesting that in indie authors, there are more people writing paranormal romance than there are writing chick lit, than there are writing action and adventure books, than there are writing children's books, according to this little survey, which I find really interesting, and even more writing erotica. So maybe the indie author market has really understood that sex sells, because more of us seem to be writing about sex than anything else.
Well, I think with the indie market too, it's also, you don't have to play the fucking game with publishing houses to where, you know, they're counting how many erotica books can go out, because bookstores, you know, like Books a Million or whichever one still fucking exists, Barnes and Noble, they probably have a very limited selection of erotica books that they will shelf, just because of the fact that you probably have to kind of screen those off, depending on, you know, just how explicit they might be. And, you know, big corporations like Barnes and Noble, they don't want that. They want it to be family friendly. Everybody come and bring the kids, let them run around. So it's probably difficult to get into that traditional market that way with a lot of erotica. Whereas, look, Amazon, fuck it. They don't care. Shit. Write whatever you got. Put it up there. They'll sell it for you. And so I think you're seeing a lot more freedom to explore that genre, just because you don't have to essentially play the censorship game like you would with the, you know, big publishing.
Very house. True. Amazon, although it does have reasonable guidelines as far as covers go, but the restrictions are far less than what your mainstream publishers are certainly going to be. Because I even considered when I thought of this subject to talk about, because you write horror, and I thought there's no sex in horror. And then, of course, my 21-year-old, explained to me that every, because she's very retro. I love her. She's very retro. She, you know, explained to me that every horror of the 1980s to 1990s had the, you know, the quintessential virgin in the white dress, big boobs, blonde hair, running through the forest with the serial killer chasing them, because...
Well, that's a final girl. That's a writing tool right there. That's a final girl. So that's a trope in horror writing, where you have that. But you also have sex using a lot of horror as plot device, because it's convenient. If you have two people out in the woods and you want to find an easy way for their guard to be down so that the maniac can sneak up, well, fuck, have them have sex. One, it's realistic. I mean, if you go camping with somebody that you're dating, odds are there's going to be some meat slapping tonight. So, it's an easy, accessible, relatable way to create that distraction so that Jason or Freddy or whoever the fuck wants to come up on in there and stab you. So, when you look at the final girl concept or just the trope of the distracted lovers in the woods, then, yeah, that is something that is commonly used in horror, just to advance plot along, or in the final girl sense, it's used to kind of
and
resolve.
And it does sell. It absolutely sells. Yeah. So it can be, if you take out the obvious, then being your children's books, your picture books, all that sort of shit, take out that because it's just irrelevant. But sex could be applied to just about every genre in order to increase sales.
Yeah. Well, yeah. that's where a lot of skill has to come into how you do it. Look, you can put sex into anything and make it seem more organic and more normal, because we as readers are organic, normal human beings who are looking for things to read. Writers as writers, we fucking write for the readers, not for each other, because we would drive each other crazy. But sex is something that's normal, it's natural, but in order to make it fit, like I said, if you can do it, if it fits, I think the kind of the line to walk is to make sure that it remains kind of an organic process in the story. If you look at traditionally WWE, for example, which you and I are both big fans of. Ross, are you a wrestling fan?
No, not particularly.
Well, you are now.
All right, well, Central, you'll understand this reference. You know, in the 90s, you had three women in WWE that were kind of the big sex cats of it. You had Sonny, Sable, and Marlena. And then as 2000s hit, right, and all of a sudden the Attitude Era and it became full swing and people realized that tits and ass were the new big thing in wrestling. And they kind of went overboard with it, though, to the point where fans were getting up to use a bathroom or get a beer when the women were coming out because it was so overdone. It was no longer happening naturally. It was no longer like, here's a really beautiful person who's going to come out and kick some ass. It was more like Vince McMahon saying, we're going to shove as much tits and ass in your face as the censors will allow. And it lost its appeal because, you know, it's almost like it's like the Streisand effect, I suppose. It's really fun when you know that it's kind of naughty and you're not really supposed to be looking at it out in the open. And then you're so shocked when it's there in your face. When all of a sudden, though, it's just everywhere, it becomes normal. And it loses that appeal. It's like alcohol. Before you turn 21, oh my God, if you're drinking, you feel like you are just goddamn breaking the law. You're like, I'm a bad motherfucker drinking this Zima, you know, at 17. Once you turn 21, though, it's like, this ain't that fun no more because you can't get in no trouble for it. That's my thoughts on it. You have to maintain that element and air of a little bit of danger-esque with it, you know, in order to keep it fun. That's my thought.
I had actually planned to put up a question on our Twitter page. Unfortunately, I had a car accident that sort of delayed me doing this. But what I wanted to do was put up two mock covers, one with a half-naked man, one with not a half-naked man on it, with the same title, same blurb, same whatever, and ask people which would you buy or which would you look at, which would you pick up instantly first? Would it be the one with the you know, eight pack and nipples and whatever else, or would it be the one that was more classically done with perhaps just a simple title and a symbolic nature to it? I obviously I didn't get a chance to get it up there, which would have proved this video a lot better, but still.
It's an interesting question, though, especially around covers, because I don't know how you guys feel about covers, but I am beginning to feel a bit, and I know that we've just had the usual shameless promos on a Saturday thing. I feel like the cover element and the naked man or the half naked woman on the cover has started to reach a point where I'm feeling I can't tell the difference between some of these covers anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they just run into another. It's just flesh on flesh on flesh. But do they sell? Do people click on them because it's penalizing it?
Well, the answer is yes.
There wouldn't be a sea of flesh if people weren't clicking on them.
Well, they achieve. All right. So we're talking about covers versus content, which are, of course, so different. I think, you know, they have to be discussed separately, I would say. A cover's job is to grab your eyeballs and get you to click or pick. So, yeah, in that case, the naked dude is probably going to get more people to look at it than the clothed guy because that's going to pop out. You can go, holy shit, who's this hunk? Versus some dude in a tuxedo. So cover-wise, yeah, if you want to get eyes on your shit, of course, the more jarring your cover is, the more, you know, crass it catches the eye, then, yeah, absolutely, that's what you want. So long as it doesn't betray the reader once you get it. If you got a picture of some big hunky dude on your book and it turns out to be a fucking cookbook or some shit that has nothing to do with this, then yeah, you might have just fucked yourself out of the sale. But if it's a romance novel or an erotica novel or a paranormal type deal, then yeah, I think that would
do well.
So I
think that you've got to maintain your authenticity, though. As you said, if you know, you don't want, unless it's the naked chef, in which case it's self-explanatory, but your cover should, as you said, your cover should not disappoint the reader once they get to the blurb or if they intend to buy it, purchase it further on. Because if you,
well, they shouldn't betray the reader. It's a difference between disappointing and betraying. You know, one is an act of talent while the other is an act of intent. You know, I can disappoint the reader by saying, hey, this is going to be a really scary fucking story. It's going to be so scary. It's going to uncurl your fucking nut hair. And then it doesn't turn out to be that scary. That's disappointing versus betraying. If I were to say, this story is going to prove that Satan really wins in the end, and then the book has nothing to do with Satan winning in the end. That's, you know, it's one is lying and one is just not being
that
a good
is
writer.
True. And obviously, Ross, you take humor. Your books are straight Grim Reaper humor.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I need to put more sex in my books. I think that's what I'm going right
he's
now.
Got no
absolutely.
Dick. Yeah. Do this. You just told
everybody
me
needs
no
more sex in their book.
Well, there are other people, and maybe he can magically get a dick. I mean, he could do that. He's the Grim Reaper.
It's very true. He can do whatever he wants, I guess. I
magic himself a cock. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, it's possible. We're writers. We're creative souls. We can do whatever, I guess. I know that my Grim Reaper prizes his very much. When he has it, of course, when he goes bone, he doesn't get it. But that's just the way it is. So yes, I guess the answer to it all is that sex does sell, but should be used only authentically towards your books.
Yeah, I think there is a danger that we all know that sex sells, but also there is a danger of people forcing that storyline. And I think this is the point that you were making before, Caleb, is forcing into a story elements of romance and of sex just to include that because they want to have a crime / romance or a paranormal romance book rather than just focusing on the main plot. So they've sandwiched something in, and that can happen, and that can destroy a story as well, just because like I really need more sex in this.
It's like contriving anything. In writing, everything is interchangeable. Sex, you know, fear, romance, triumph, terror, whatever. It's all elements that pile into literature that create a narrative. It's all it is. So if you contrive it, if your story it jars the reader, what do I always say, you know, Center, the only rule is never break reader immersion. And if you drop a raunchy sex scene in just because you feel like you just need one in there and it doesn't fit the story, you don't know how to set it up, you don't know how to execute it or resolve it, then yeah, the reader's going to go, why in the fuck is that there? You know, and it's going to break the reader immersion. And there you go. You've broken the King of Schlock's one golden rule. So yeah, if you can do it, like I said, with anything, it comes down to individual authors, talent. It's not what should or shouldn't you do. It's what can and can't you do. If you got the skill to put an awesome sex scene into a fucking horror story, I do. I've put some good scenes into mine. Then go for it. Make it happen. But if you're not there yet, or if you don't know how, don't fucking roll the dice with your readers.
I 100% agree with you. But if I come, like, okay, so talking about, say, my dragons, my dragon book says 5 in it. This is book 2. Now, I'd finished the entire book, and there was no sex in it. Now, this is a paranormal romance. There was sex in book 1, there's sex in book 3, there's no sex in book 2. I had readers coming to me going, where's the sex? And I'm like, I don't know. The characters didn't do it. I didn't write it. I can't just put it in. I can't strap it on him and go, hey, let's go there. Because they don't want to. It wasn't part of their story. It wasn't relevant.
You said strap on.
<I'm>, stop. Pain. I couldn't write the sex scene in their book because there wasn't one that they showed me to write. So I had readers that said, you know, I wouldn't continue with the series because I hadn't put sex in it. And I'm like, oh, okay, well then don't read the damn books. Whatever. I still can't.
Well, you know, that could just be part of that market writing issue that comes up. You know, people have these expectations. I mean,
But there's going to be
you know,
authors out there
it's
that would
different.
go, oh, okay, I'll make sure I double up next time to keep you as a reader. I can't do that, you know? Right.
Yeah. Let's
Well, yeah,
move
I mean,
towards as
obviously
much sex.
you can't win them all, yeah.
So I just let it be. I was like, well, you know, the readers are going to be the readers, and I'm going to write whatever story that the characters put forward, and the cards will lay wherever the fucking cards lay.
Just tell your characters to get hornier, Sintra. Just tell them to fucking, you know,
Come on, guys. You know you
watch some
want
Pornhub.
it.
Just sit there and go, come
Yeah.
on, come on, give in.
on, you bastards. Take off your
Oh,
pants.
I can't. Oh, that's funny. I see. Well, I don't know. It's fine. It's just a question that I always am interested in people's take on, because you know the world knows sex sells. However, I think in order sometimes to stand out from others, perhaps not using the naked man on the cover and relying on something more symbolic or something that you might have a better representation of your story would make your book, as these your readers are scrolling through Amazon, you know, book after book after book after book, it will pop out as being not made of flesh and might stand out for that reason. And you know, and I encourage authors to explore more than relying on the basic sex sells rule.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about what you feel best represents your book. If you're going out of your way to, I mean, it's the same trap that you fall into if you go out of your way to add in sex. If you're going out of your way to avoid using it, then you're falling into the same trap. You're still contriving situations that don't fit. So it's all about following your instinct. You know, if you can write hot, steamy love scenes, if you enjoy writing them and your readers enjoy them, then goddamn, yeah, the world needs more love.
Can I? I
That's kind
completely
of my
agree.
closing statement on it is just don't contrive your fucking writer's voice. All right. Don't avoid things on purpose. Don't overuse things on purpose. Just be a goddamn writer.
True.
There is one thing, and I'm going to annoy you both because I have one more question along this lines. Is we agree that sex sells, and it has a huge impact on people's writing and when you're reading things as well. But the converse I find is true as well. If I'm reading a book where I don't expect it at all, and then I find myself faced with 20 pages of sex, I'm like, okay, great, we're going to read about sex. But it can have just as powerful a point. If you've put that in there and the reader doesn't expect it and it kind of comes out of nowhere, and very much is what you're saying before, it can have a worse effect than any impact that you think might have improved your sales or made a book better by having the sex in there. It has to be organic. It has to work. It has to be. And I think that's what everybody's saying. If it doesn't work, there's no
Oh
point
yeah,
putting it.
that's absolutely
Well, you can
true.
turn away readers as
I agree
quickly
with
as
that.
getting them if they come, you know, a horror book and suddenly there's 20 pages of erotica in the middle of it that doesn't seem relevant to the story, because if it's relevant, then you know, it's going to feel like it's in
Exactly.
play. If you know, if
Here's the
you're
thing,
slapped
though.
in the face with a cock all of a
It,
sudden and you're like, what the fuck is that? You're never going to read that writer again.
Where'd that cock come
But you're never
from?
going to.
It just hit me in
You're never going to
the
read the writer again. You're going to
face.
see that author's name and go, oh no, I remember that cock. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out. You know?
I
But
remember
here's the
that guy
whole thing
slapping me with that cock.
Exactly.
With everything we've talked about, it's all, like I said, it's all interchangeable though. If you're reading an erotica book and then all of a sudden you had 20 pages of horror show up out of nowhere, odds are you might not
Very
read
true.
that person.
Very true. That's true, yeah.
So it is sex is not exclusive in any way, shape, or form in the literature. Every trope, every conceptual element of genre or even general writing, you know, it has its place. It can be overused, it can be underused. There's times that it should be used, there's times when it shouldn't. And the true talent of an author is knowing, You know, like the song says, know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And that's really, it doesn't matter if you're talking about sex or if you're talking about comedy or if you're talking about whatever. Either the time and place it works or it doesn't. And the difference between a writer and somebody who just writes is having that natural skill, that natural instinct of an artist to know when's the best place to put it and when's the best place to not put it. Even if you want it in there, maybe it shouldn't. Or maybe if you're kind of shy type, maybe you should still put it in there. Anyway. And that's
being authentic to your work. Authentic. Yeah, to yourself, to your brand, to your books, to your characters. Absolutely. No, I like that. It all makes sense. I like it. Well done. You do have
I have my moments.
Mm. And we all know that Ross's Reaper has no dick now, so he can't slap it in anybody's face in his book.
We have a dickless Reaper in the house here. Ain't nobody going to be scared of him now. He's going to come to kill you. I'm just going to laugh at him. Be like, he ain't got no fucking dick, dude. Get out of here.
Ross's book at the moment, and now I'm like, what? You got no dick? I don't want to know this from the start of the book.
Is he the John Wayne Bobbitt of Grim Reapers? Did he get his dick cut
off? You know
off?
What I do love about Ross Young, though, is that he's very true to his character. And even to the point where his VSS quite often will relate back to the Grim Reaper. And I love it because it involves and engages readers, new readers, old readers. It keeps you going within a story beyond the covers of a book, which I think is a talent that should be incorporated into a lot more authors, where you can go, okay, well, there's my story. But if I do little short snippets, little VSS, you know, put out a short story in your newsletters or whatever else, you can take your reader beyond that and keep them wanting more. And I think that's really clever. Well done, Ross.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that.
No problem.
Y'all want to hear a funny story about the Grim Reaper real quick? All right, check this out. When I was a kid, I've always been obsessed with horror shit and nothing's changed. When I was a kid, I found out what the Grim Reaper was from New Year's. You know, you got the New Year baby and you got like the old man and shit. So apparently somebody was like, oh yeah, the old man represents death or the Grim Reaper or something like that. And then I rented Castlevania for the Nintendo from the local video store back when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And they had a Grim Reaper boss fight in that game. And I kept talking about it to my mom over and over again. I just kept going through the instructions, talking about the Grim Reaper. My mother got so sick of hearing about the damn Grim Reaper. She said, if you say that shit one more time, I'm going to take the game away. So I started referring to it as the GR. And she still got pissed. But yeah, I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to call him GR then. Okay, so you see there's this part where, yeah. So I would say I kind of went through an obsession with
it. You sound like my son. He does that. He'll just mutate the name into something else just so he can continue the subject. But see if he can get it cut.
Ross, you got a lot of followers, man. You need to fucking send some of them.
Mine.
Ross got a nice fucking group too, man. Look at this Ross shit. He got 10,000. Ross is rocking it, man. Man, I'm pathetic, man. Shit, I just can't win.
You got to get into your VSS. Honestly, it's one of the most.
I do good VSS.
I do. I love your VSS. I know. I love your VSS.
Thank you.
It needs more. You need more of them, more regularly.
I know. I should be on there more often.
The amount of engagement
I
get, and I'm sure Ross is the same with this because I watch his, because I follow his VSS because I enjoy them. They're entertaining. And, you know, the amount of engagement that you can get back from them and that gains your followers. And it's a phenomenal event.
It is good.
I got more followers
and great exercise as well.
Oh, absolutely. The VSS this month's been freaking hard.
I don't know. This last month was fucking all over the place, though, man. I didn't know what none of them damn words was.
The one this month, though, she gives you the definition every time. It's fantastic. I go, this is great. I don't have to look it up.
Who's handling it this month? Who's got it this month?
Name's Carlo.
Who's got it this month?
I'll send you the link. I can't pronounce it.
She has been just good this month, yeah. It has been good this month, and having the definitions does help because a lot of the time I'm just going, "What the hell? What is that word?"
Central, you're getting it this year, aren't you?
Next year, and Lord help everybody on my month because it's going to be a doozy. But I love the way this woman did with the definitions, and it's something that I'm going to be doing with mine, because I thought that that was a really clear way of showing people, hey, it's a new word to you, or it could be a new word to you. This is the definition, straight up. You don't have to look for it. It's all here, ready to go. And I thought that was a really clever way of doing it. And I've learned some great new words, and I love it.
Yeah, it is
coolio. Good. I guess I should try to get back into it. I do get a lot of engagement on MVSSs. So I don't know, man. Sometimes the word speaks to me, and sometimes I'm just like, I can't.
You got to do shit with it. You got to force yourself. It's as Ross said, it's an exercise.
If I force myself, it's going to be
exercise
shit.
Exercise for your brain.
90% of mine are shit, but the 10% that are good, I'm okay with that.
That's it.
There we
and
go.
The engagement you get off them and the followers is really worth the effort. I love the VSS. I cannot praise it enough. I love, love, love it.
There you have it, folks. Get on them VSSs and check out next year. Central gonna have it. Central, I'm just gonna send you a list of words that I'm very good at.
Are they gonna be pornographic words, Caleb?
Yeah, it's gonna be a horrific probably. Month of just sandwich all of this abuse into as many different things as you can.
I could do a month of erotica words. That'd be fun.
Oh, I could.
All right, well, you
don't. That's going to be so hard for me. The Grim Reaper hasn't got a cock.
Please.
It's going to be really hard for him.
It's not hard.
Speaking of things that might be a little bit hard to get through, who's ready to look at some of this damn dead dunderhead?
Let's read. Let's do some fan fiction, because you popped my fan fiction cherry last week and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So nice. I'm signing up for some more fan fiction reading. Now, we've decided that the story we started last week, we need to keep for David, because he was invested in where the leg was going. There was shooting. There was blood. We don't want to David to miss out on the ending of that, or the next chapter of that particular story. Yeah. So for Ross being our special guest this week, Caleb's chosen a different one.
That's right. We're going to do a Three Stooges horror story. All right. That was written over on the Creepypasta Wiki, credited to Taco Express. That is the username at the bottom of this story. But look, I like tacos and I like things that are express. So, I mean, we're off to a good start, I think.
Express, yes, there it is. Lord help. Well, there's a lot of taco love in the world. So,
Ross, do you have this story up in front of you?
Yeah, I'm looking at this story. We're gonna.
Okay. Well, you know what? You are the special guest. You want to do what? Three paragraphs at a time, Centra per person. That sounds fair. All right. So, Ross, go ahead and give us that title and start reading those three sentences, or three paragraphs.
Okay.
And then we want to do Ross, Centra, and myself, or do you want to go third, Centra?
So if you want to go second, you can go second. If you want me to go,
I'll go second. All right. I'll pick up after Ross.
Okay. Here we go. Three Stooges, Dead Dunderheads. When the original Three Stooges aired in 1930, it was obviously going to be a big hit. It aired in almost every single movie theater. I'm just going to add words in. Three Stooges were only shown in movies. Stop laughing. I'm trying to talk here. Three Stooges were only shown in movie theaters for the first few years across the country. Three Stooges had begun to air on television and had multiple spin-offs, including The Three Stooges with Mo, Joe, and Larry, or The Three Stooges with Mo, Champ, and Larry. But everyone's favorite was probably...
Who the fuck is Joe?
Mo. Don't stop me midway. I'm not even through one paragraph yet. But everyone's favorite was probably The Three Stooges with Curly Howard. Opinions began to change when almost every Three Stooges fan was exposed to one of the most shocking episodes yet. It was 1947, and the episode Half-Wits Holiday was about to come to theaters. This episode marked the end of the Mo, Larry, and Curly era, as Curly had suffered a major stroke on set. Surprisingly, the episode only aired in two or three theaters in the US, and only a few people had attended the screenings for it. On the fourth day of its release, the film aired at a small suburban neighborhood shopping center. the shopping centre had a theatre with the latest films of the generation. According to police, only three or four individuals had arrived in the theatre to watch a simple screening of what they thought would be Half-Wits Holiday. It was later revealed that it was much more than that.
Here we go. The episode started off normally, as any regular episode would. The title frame slowly faded into view and remained on screen for a good minute. This is when things began to go awry. The title frame began to shake violently, then disappeared altogether. Viewers were shown a white screen for a good 5 minutes and reported quite a ruckus, possibly a struggle of an individual. An alternate title frame slowly faded into view and was simply labeled The Three Stooges. In a similar font, except without the faces of the main characters and the music playing in the background. The title frame faded out and the name of the episode was widely printed across the screen. The words read, Dead Dunderheads, for a split second, then abruptly transferred to Dead Dunderheads, then simply to Dead. The screen quickly transferred to the actual episode. A camera faced a room with no furniture, with the exception of some tarp on the ground and a ladder in the background. It apparently looked as if the room was being remodeled. A man, dressed up as Mo, waddles onto the screen reluctantly, wearing a cheap bowl-cut wig that looked as if it was about to fall off. A tag is clearly seen in the back of the wig, whether it was for entertainment purposes or not. The man had a worried look in his face. His eyes darted around the room nervously, his fingers constantly fidgeting. He appeared to be waiting for someone to come on screen.
Small murmurs are heard on the background, and after about 30 seconds, a so-called Curly is apparently pushed on screen. Curly was an overweight man with a black eye and multiple cuts on his cheeks and scalp. His mouth was slanted and in a downward position. He was stop it, and he looked, and he too looked nervous. I'm not even like two sentences into it. He told Mo to go check the flooring on the other side of the room in an unprofessional way, quietly with a couple of words slurred. Mo shuffled off camera, and as soon as he leaves the side of the camera, the so-called Larry walked into the screen. This had been the worst of the two. It was female, with her hair messily cut and styled to represent the original Larry from the original Stooges. During lines, she would occasionally sob or mispronounce a word or two. Curly tells her she needs to fix the roof and points to the ladder. By now, tears are clearly visible streaming down Larry's face as she hesitates to walk to the ladder. She finally seems to build up enough courage to climb up the few steps on the ladder and pretends to work on the roof with a wrench. Curly then bends down and pulls out a toolbox. He reveals that he has multiple sharp, dangerous tools with him and lays them out sharp. This isn't going to go well, people. This is not going to go well. For a few minutes, everything seems too normal. Around the 3 minute mark, Mo walks onto the screen, stares at the ladder that Larry is working on, and heaves a sigh. He slowly walks by the ladder as the camera zooms in on his feet. Ross?
One of directed by Quentin Tarantino.
One of his feet gets caught on one of the legs of the ladder, and the ladder is swept from underneath Larry. Mo hits the ground hard as the ladder comes crashing down. Larry falls onto the ground on top of the ladder, along with the wrench, which hits Mo in the back of the head. Mo appears to spew blood on the ground, but by the next frame, the blood is gone and Mo is cleaned up. A look of pain comes onto the face of female Larry. He struggles to stand up, and it appears that he had landed on his wrist. He clenches his wrist tightly as he walks over to Mo, waits for him to stand up, and pokes him in the eyes rather aggressively. Mo cries, "Ooh."
That's, like how fucking aroused he sounds. Ooh.
That's what it sounds. And falls to the ground, his hands covering his eyes. He quickly works himself up, gives Larry a death glare, and says a chilling line. "If you want war, you'll get a war." He smacks. Okay, I'm still going. He smacks Larry upside the head, leaving Larry distorted and in pain. He pushes Curly out of the way, who has finished laying out all his tools. Mo bends down and picks up a screwdriver. He trudges over to Larry, who is still hunched over in pain. He taps on Larry's shoulder. Larry looks up, and Mo drives the screwdriver into Larry's eye.
Good. By now, three of the four audience members have gotten up and left the theater. Children crying, women shaking with fear. The only remaining audience member was a male in his 20s, an amateur movie maker studying the art of movies and television shorts so that one day a film could be in the theaters. Sure, he was disgusted, but he had no idea that it was real. He continued to take notes about the film's violent nature. Three audience members report to the staff, who assume that the wrong movie is playing, and also assume that everyone has left the theater, so they leave the film running. Why would you leave it running if nobody was in there? Mo lets go of the screwdriver and puts his bloody hands over his eyes, appearing to block the violence away from his vision. The camera now focuses on Larry, now crying, blood running down his face. Larry drops to the tarp and passes out from shock. It is unknown if Larry is even alive by now, but how do you know he passed out then? But if it even matters, Mo bends down and yanks the screwdriver out of Larry's eye. The screwdriver possibly penetrated the brain, leaving Larry motionless on the tarp. Mo faces the camera and mutters, "You heartless, sick bat." Take
I got
it, Sentra.
The film is obviously edited out because a puddle of blood has now formed underneath Larry, and Mo had multiple bruises and cuts on his face now. The man watching the film later complained to the authorities that the film had begun to get fuzzy and distorted, giving me a headache. Oh, it gave Larry a fucking headache, didn't it? A headache.
Yeah, a headache indeed.
The film appeared to be damaged at the part in the film reel as the screen flashed black and a white and black rapidly, leaving the next series of events illegible to the next few minutes. After the flashing stops, the audio appears to not work.
Illegible. Are you reading this movie?
I've joined. It reads very like. As it appears, Mo is saying something to Curly, but it is impossible to hear what he is saying. Since the beginning of the white flashing, Mo appears to have had new cuts, and Curly appears to have a sliced lip. Larry is now obviously dead, but the actors take no notice to him. Okay. Mo appears to be sawing some wood and with a rusty old saw, and Curly is hammering some nails into the wall with for no apparent reason. Because this is what you do. As Curly walks into the room to get some more nails off screen, he slips on one of the tools laid out and reaches for Mo to help him. He accidentally grabs for the saw, reaching his hand vulgarly. How do you reach his hand? And he hits the ground with a thud. The audio abruptly begins to work here again, and Curly is now heard whimpering as he crawls off the screen, leaving a trail of blood.
I mean, you would have had to have heard the thud to know that it was a thud, right? So the audio must have started working there.
Scratching his hand vulgarly means. Anyway, all right.
Well, you know, like, it was all fucking bloody and shit, man. It was nasty.
Okay. Ross, guy. You fool,
I don't
come
know.
On.
You fool, someone could have gotten hurt, Mo shouts. He scolds Curly when he walks back onto the screen by giving him a sturdy punch in the stomach. Sturdy.
That's not a scolding.
A strange look comes upon Curly's face as he bends over and vomits up a little fluid, as opposed to solids.
Yes.
Small chuckles and snickers are heard in the background as Curly returns to punching nails in the wall. Now breathing heavier, as if he is about to burst into tears. About 5 minutes pass, and Curly asks for some help from Mo to nail some more nails into the wall. Mo holds the nail as Curly hammers the nail more and more into the wall. You'd expect Curly to hit Mo on the thumb with the hammer, but it luckily doesn't happen. Instead, when Mo walks back to sawing more wood, he asks Curly for some help. Curly holds the wooden plank for Mo, who messily cuts and deliberately lets the saw blade graze Curly's fingers. Curly quickly draws away with a furious look on his face, picks up his hammer, and swings the hammer into Mo's genitals. As Mo falls to the floor.
Oh,
Really? And Mo falls to the floor, blood and semen leak out of his pants.
What?
He gasps for breath as he grabs Curly's leg and begins to bite. Curly gives another swing of the hammer to Mo's hand, leaving it dislocated with the bone snapped. That's broken then. That's technically broken.
Yeah.
Okay. Mo crawls over to the saw, now on the floor, and throws it at Curly. The saw blade penetrates Curly's big round belly as blood oozes out of both his stomach and mouth. No semen, though. He lets go of the hammer.
No semen.
Which falls upon his toes, making a large echoing cracking sound. Just, wow. That sounds horrible.
Curly begins to mumble gibberish and slurred sentences about toys and sports, then rude remarks about his mother and his genitals. I'm just trying to imagine this. So he's like, football, GI Joe, football, my mother, fucking testicles. Like, how would that even? Okay. As he talks and faces the camera, blood often manages to shoot out of his mouth and onto the lens of the camera. During the middle of one of his sentences, he collapses to the ground, barely even alive, and manages to grab the hammer, still mumbling on and on about nonsense, whoop, 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 and heaves it with his last bit of strength at Mo, who is now unconscious. The hammer slams into his back, shattering his spine. Well, they must have had an x-ray machine going on this film because this guy really knows everything that happened internally. Curly manages to laugh a little bit, but then passes out from blood loss. Loud laughter is now heard as the film reel decays, leaving a plain white screen. The laughter soon fades out, and the one man in the audience is left in awe. The police arrive a few minutes later, who manage to seize the film and evacuate the theater. Why would that have been a police matter?
This is like
a shitty movie. Like, get the cops down here. It's the fucking Three Stooges.
It's a snuff film, it sounds like.
I like how they come in there, seize the film, which they said decayed, so I don't know what they seized exactly, and then they evacuate the theater from possible threats. Like, look out, there might be a sequel. Get out of here. Central, read us some aftershock and analysis.
When police entered the room where the film had been projected onto the screen, they found a man, supposedly the one who was originally supposed to air Halfwit's Holiday, tied up and intensely beaten. The man remembers little and is worried that the man who tied him up may come back and kill him if he gives any information to the police. It is obvious that his wounds that the man had taken were not self-inflicted, but he is still a major suspect in the case. The man who made the film reel is said to be a sadistic filmmaker who is addicted to the Three Stooges, because I can see the connection between the Three Stooges and sadism. Okay. The police have no information on him at all, apart from some evidence on the film. Police have three things to work with in the film. For a few seconds, a shadow appears that the man is holding something similar to a clipboard. The shadow then goes out of sight. The second piece of evidence is a few mistakes that he had accidentally revealed the tone of his voice with a few snickers. He had let escape out of his mouth multiple times. His voice is deep.
I could see the cops are like, all right, get every guy in town, line them up and make them all tickle all of them. We're going to listen to how they snicker.
His voice is deep and hollow, and it seems to belong to a white man in his 50s. The third piece of evidence is visible when the man appears to signal for someone to come to him, letting his hand come onto the camera. His hand had multiple scars, wrinkles, and freckles. Hey, that could be mine. Signaling that he is in his late 50s, which I'm not quite. And the film aired that.
How are they getting to such a specific age range?
I don't know. All right.
Love the fact that he's got the
hands of a 50-year-old.
Yeah, they got his age and race from his voice, but then mentioned the hand afterwards. The hand would be more helpful, surely.
All right.
Okay.
For the race, the hand, absolutely. Yeah.
Ross, your turn.
I'm excited to read more.
Oh, you got it.
The actor for Curly was actually an autistic man kidnapped from the mental hospital when he wandered out the front door and down the street. The actor for Mo was a businessman who was addicted to drinking alcohol and doing drugs. He was kidnapped.
Isn't that just called an alcoholic?
Yeah, nope. He was addicted to drinking alcohol. You've got to be careful with labels. He was kidnapped on his way home from work. The actress for Larry was a cheating wife who had four husbands. She was kidnapped while walking
four
to her job.
She's stupid.
She was walking to her fifth wedding that day.
Yeah. Okay. They were technically paragraphs.
No, keep going.
All right, okay.
Well. Okay, no, I'll keep going. It's fine.
Do this little snippet right here.
Okay, the three had no relations in any way, but what the police did discover is that they each had flaws in their lives, and the police assumed that the madman wanted to make life more perfect by erasing all flaws from the human race by making a film.
By way of...
It's going to take a long time.
The film was shot on location in a local abandoned office building. The actor, well, that doesn't make what location. The actor for Mo was pronounced dead. The actress for Larry was also pronounced dead. But the actor for Curly was in critical condition and was on the verge of death. That's pretty critical. He slowly recuperated and managed to live a few more years until committing suicide. He did not tell the police much. What he did tell was rather helpful.
Hang on.
Bad man was out the door. I'm doing the curl. He was like, the bad man was out the door and drove away. Whoop, whoop, whoop. He told one of his friends that he was going far, far away. Police have been on the lookout all over the country, but there's been no luck. The reward for capturing him has been raised to $5 million. $5 million what? Columbia, I mean, it's no dollars. Columbia Pictures was notified about this event, but refused to comment on it. A couple of workers quit from Columbia shortly after, believing that one of them possibly could have been the sick person that wrote this. As for the amateur filmmaker, he came to be my grandfather, who happened to tell me this whole story. He has been questioned by the authorities as well, and is also another major factor in this. The man who had filmed the film, though, not the filmmaker, but the man who filmed the film, is probably dead. If he was in his 50s, 70 years ago, then yeah, he'd be probably fucking dead. The case can be dismissed and all can be at peace. Well, I'd love to tell you more, but I have to leave. Someone was talking to me about starring in an independent film. Uh-oh!
Taco Express. My Lord, you have a twisted little mind, mate. A twisted little mind. I don't know if I'll ever look at Larry, Moe, and Curly quite the same.
I don't know if you possibly can. I will always hear dead dunderheads in the back of my mind.
I love this fan fiction thing. It's, as I said, it's last week you popped my cherry on it, and it proves that it takes me on a journey where I have preconceived ideas on how certain characters are supposed to be, and like that took me in a completely different way.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that little story. Yeah, it's easy to kind of pick at it, but at the same time, you kind of got to really want to write that, and I admire that. So hats off to you there, Taco Express. Keep working on your craft, and maybe one day you can make the next great fucking Three Stooges horror film.
I think they need a visit.
No, I like that. That was good. It's funny reading it anyway. We're going to laugh because we're all reading it, but, that's good fun, and it's not a bad story. Okay, it needs a bit of work.
No,
it's
not at all.
Bad story.
It could do with a little editing, but that's just my own stuff.
But you know what? I mean, when I sat down and looked up Three Stooges fan fiction horror and found something, I got to admit, I was pleasantly surprised that it was as good as it was. So that guy definitely has a great potential to write. Just keep up.
And
keep
I love
up,
the fact
up.
That we've embraced the horror today. For our guest star, of course, and you, our resident horror expert, that we've embraced the gore that the horror brings.
Yeah. Remember, Curly and his saw might still be out there somewhere, you know.
Driver in Larry's head at the moment. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, it's a nice distraction from what's going on in my head anyway. So that's good. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Well, bookies, that brings us to the end of our episode today. I want to thank Ross Young for standing in for David. He has been an utter pleasure to be here. Where do they find you, Ross? How can our bookers find you? Where will they stalk you?
Oh, stalk me on Twitter. That's where most people stalk me. So it's at Ink Disregarded. I know it's a really weird name, but it was a long time ago when I made that up.
And they can type in Ross Young, find you on VSS, of course, as well. R.Young, and he'll pop up. Also, I'll pop his Twitter handle up on What the Book podcast anyway. So you can stalk him directly through our links on Pay.
Awesome.
That
was really good.
Oh, what you got, Ross?
Pardon? This is the only time this has happened.
What? Oh, it always happens at the end. Caleb, where can they find you? Of course.
All right. Well, you can always find the good old King of Schlock, Cabe Banning. Call him on Twitter at BanningK1979. That is BanningK1979. Come follow the fuck out of me. I am also on Instagram at K_Banning_Kellum. And I also have a Facebook author page, K Banning Kellum, author of horror on Facebook. Come check me
absolutely out. And me, you can find me anywhere. Type in Cintra Sullivan on any of your platforms and I will be there. Stalk me, find me, talk to me. Come talk to us, bookers. We want to know what you want us to talk about. If you have a piece of fan fiction you want us to read out, send it to us. We will read it out. We will have some fun. We do have some secret readings coming up over the next week or two. Please stay tuned for that. There is one especially that I am super, super excited about that involves Rebecca Ridge and Cabe Kellum.
Oh, my best friend right there. Absolutely.
Stoked about this. So stay tuned, bookers. That is going to be a hoot and a holler. All right, that's it.
That's going to be good.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion on sex and our fan fiction reading. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Caleb.
Thank you very much, guys.
Good night,
bookers. Bye.
Bye.